Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have a very interesting, entertaining show for you today. Something tells me it's going to be a lot of fun. But before I go ahead and introduce our guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone somewhere who needs to see this show today. And they won't be able to see it unless you let them know. So send that text, send that tweet, send that inbox, post it to your social media, get it everywhere, LinkedIn, Facebook. But while you're grabbing your notebook and your recorder, I'm gonna go ahead and introduce our first guest. Now, our first guest, his nickname is Trouble, because he always gives me a hard time. You've seen him on the Roundtable Talk Show. You've seen him Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Face-to-Face Talk Show, where we have the difficult conversations. But today he's here just to chat with us for a little while. Mr. Paul Foss, president of Ring Boost. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good morning.
You?
Good morning. I'm always good. You know that.
Yes.
Thanks for having me on this show. This is how we met. This show. This is our first, I remember a long time ago. So I'm excited to be here, because on the other show, I don't talk about what I do. I don't talk about my business. I don't talk about the media. It's really, we're talking about issues, you know, that are facing the country. So it's cool to come on the show and talk to other business owners, entrepreneurs. So yes, I am the president of ringboost.com. Our specialty is providing phone numbers to business owners to use in their marketing. So memorable local numbers, toll-free numbers, vanity numbers. If you've seen the 1-800-Flowers or the 914-222-2222, that's our product. Our product is a phone number that business owners can use to drive more voice interactions. But our why is not phone numbers. Our why is because we are passionate about voice communication and that your voice matters. In this ever-increasing age of technology and digital platforms and Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat, you know, all this stuff, the one thing that will never be democratized is your voice. Felicia, Bell, myself, Allison, Sharifa, we're all individuals. Technology cannot change that. So I could build a website to copy any business in the world. I could have the same chat bots. I could have the same social media presence. What you're never getting is me. I am unique. You are all unique. So we believe in the power of voice. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't believe in technology and social media and all. Big fan of it. We use it. But we also believe in driving voice communication with our clients and helping our clients to do that, because it is the greatest differentiator we have, is who we are. So our business is about the power of voice, the power of your voice, and being able to use it in your business to connect with clients, either to close deals, for customer service, for any purpose. So that's really what we do at Ring Boost, is I work with business owners from the local dog walker to the Fortune 10, biggest companies in the world, helping them with their voice strategy. And our tool is the phone number. And what I always say to people when I go to conferences or when I speak at conferences is, it fascinates me that business owners will spend time, money, and effort to choose their name, their domain, their tagline, their logo. Most of them spent more time picking out the paint color in their office than they did their phone number. They just go to the phone company and say, okay, just give me the next one off the pile. And to me, that's insane. You're going to choose all these things about your business, and then that one connection piece of how people call you, you've left up to chance. So that's what we do at Ring Boost. Ringboost.com is the website. Work with every size business in every industry. You can't name an industry that I haven't helped people in. So
let me ask you then, because I have an industry, politics, because I just announced I'm running for California State Senate. So do you think a custom phone number would be beneficial for my campaign?
It's a no-brainer. Politicians, charities use phone numbers to get new volunteers, to get donations, to put out there to potential constituents to answer questions about, hey, if you want to know about me, if you want to join our team, if you want to donate, you can call some random set of digits or, you know, for Sharifa or something like that. Consumers and clients and potential followers or people who want to support you, we are bombarded with thousands and thousands of messages a day, more and more so than ever before because we have multiple platforms. How is it that you're going to stand out? How is it that when I drive by, you know, 50 billboards and bus benches and taxi tops and the radio's on and my phone serving me ads and Facebook thinks they know me and they say, which I love, and they send me ads all the time. It's just rising above the noise. And if I say, oh, my friend's running, this is her platform and you should really learn more about her. And they say, okay, where can I learn more about her? Well, I could send them to your website. But if I also just say, hey, call, you know, 100Tarifa or something like that. Yes, it's a tool that anyone can use, whether it be to grow your business, whether it be to solicit donations, get volunteers, get opinions. You know, you want people to call in and tell you what matters to them. Why not make it easy for them to reach you? It's all it is we're trying to make it easier for people to connect with who they want to connect with. And the tool happens to be the phone number. That's it. It's very simple, but it's overlooked.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you look around my office, which you probably can't see, I brought in paint swatches to pick what color I want. Like this wall is red. I put where the light switch is. I picked the carpet out, but then I just let someone at the phone company hand me 7 digits. It's crazy. So I mean, look at what you spent. And I saw Allison has a really cool logo. Maybe she designed herself. Maybe you paid a logo designer. Look, Sharif, I know you posted up a few different options and asked people for opinions on which number, but you've never asked anybody which number makes sense. You know, which one is easier to remember. So that's it. It's a simple tool that is just often overlooked, but it's all about how your voice individually matters. Your voice as a business matters. You are not the same as every other roofer in your community. You might all work on roofs. You might all use the same equipment, but they're not you. They're not your passion behind the business, why you do it, how you're going to service that client. And I think the only way that comes across is with voice, with getting to know me. And I don't want to live in a world where my chatbot talks to your chatbot that books the job, does the work, and then follows up, and we just have no connection. It's not a world I want to be in.
Let's talk about that, because you made some interesting points and we can go in a million different directions.
Which ones?
A lot, Paul. You said a lot of things. That's okay. Why we have to move on, because if not, it becomes the Paul Foss show.
That's our next show.
Right. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce my next guest. You may recognize her voice, her name, her business, because she has been on the Roundtable Talk Show several times, Ms. Belle Walker. Belle is the founder and lead consultant of Bellevue Consulting. Until April 2019, she was a director of engineering at Here Technologies, an industry leader in digital mapping. There, she built several successful teams, including one responsible for content and process quality, process efficiency, and operational excellence for the HD Live Map product, merging data scientists, software engineers, system engineers, project managers, and more, showcased Bell's organizational design and leadership skills. Now, that's Bell's bio, but one of the things that I love about Bell is that she always provides us with relevant information that can help us today. Good morning, Bell. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I am excellent because I love kicking off my week with the roundtable. It is always a good week when I get to start with you.
Thank you. I feel the same. I love having regular guests, because what happens is guests come on the show, we get a little taste of who they are, a little taste of what they do, and then they kind of disappear. You know, with you, every time you're on here, we learn something new. You had a webinar that was coming up on the last show. So what happened with that?
So on the last show, it was a business boot camp for nonprofit leaders, which is not actually running until January. So there's still time for nonprofit leaders to apply to the program. It's NFP Bootcamp, notforprofitbootcamp.com. We're really excited for the program in January. They're speaking, Paul hit on a lot of really good points that we don't always think about the small enablers for our businesses. And I think that's even more important in the nonprofit community, because we give a lot of leadership training, and leadership is fundamental. If you can't motivate, if you can't inspire your teams, you're dead in the water, right? But for people who are responsible for teams in management roles, leadership is the foundation. It's not the whole picture. You have to not only inspire and motivate, you also have to enable and empower your teams. And that management training is not something that's often made available to nonprofits in a blanket manner. The only trainings I've seen like this usually come from large foundations that you have to have a grant from them already. Our program is open to anyone. But this week I do also have a webinar coming up on December 15th, which is my Friction to Function interactive webinar, where I provide leaders with an example. I talk through some of the basic foundational principles, and then we do a case study together, where we look at some of the challenges that business leaders and business owners typically face and practice how we take the first step towards addressing those challenges.
That sounds interesting. I want to learn more. So who is this like an ideal fit for?
So this would be anyone who is in a leadership position and maybe feeling overwhelmed by the challenges that their business is facing right now.
Does it have a particular focus on COVID or not?
No, not a particular focus on COVID, because COVID is just one of so many factors that tend to overwhelm us. So it's, you know, and COVID is maybe a root cause, but it's a root cause we don't have much control over. So the question is, what are the elements that we can control and what are those steps we can take as business owners and leaders to address the pain points?
No, I was just wondering, not that you need it, because there are 2 billion webinars on COVID right now, but it's just that leadership aspect, because one of the things that I've seen, especially being in California, is that there are so many differences in what can happen. You know, in Long Beach, they shut down everything, whereas the next city over, things are open. So leaders don't know what to tell their employees. They don't know what to say. So it doesn't have to be an aspect. We'll find out more, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Allison Minutillo. Allison is the president and COO of Rebel Interactive Group, a digital marketing agency located in Central Connecticut. Allison has over 10 years of experience working with clients on their marketing strategy. Recently, Allison was promoted to president of Rebel for her phenomenal work being a key leader at Rebel Interactive Group. Allison was instrumental in preparing Rebel to navigate COVID-19 and continuing to thrive since. She'll also talk a little bit about her podcast. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on. It's so nice hearing from other business owners and leaders in this space.
Yes, but we want to learn from you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're here today.
Yeah, so it was interesting listening to both of you speak first, because I see a lot of parallels in what I found to be successful on our side. So Rebel Interactive Group specifically is a digital marketing agency. So we feel like there is a different way of doing things. And there are a million agencies that are one size fits all and offer the same types of services. But we believe that the way that we do them and the way that we approach things rebelliously challenges the status quo, asks questions differently, pushes our clients to achieve things greater than what they are achieving now, challenges each other internally to say, no, we can be doing this better. We can look at things differently. And the way and the methodology that we approach things is what makes us rebellious and inspires the best ideas and thinking from our people. So from that standpoint, we're full service. We do everything from branding to data science to advertising campaigns and branding and all sorts of components, web design, all the kit and caboodle that you would need for digital marketing, but it's about the way that we do it. So hearing Belle talk about leadership, I could not agree more. There is so much of culture these days when it comes to business, especially once everybody became remote, that is starts from leadership. And then hearing Paul talk about the power of voice. So I too don't want to live in a world where people can hide behind text and be, you know, internet gremlins and share feedback that way. I think there is power with us talking to each other and having the courage to have hard conversations and real authentic dialogue that is uncomfortable at times and talks about the hard stuff and sheds light on the complexities of decision-making and choice and strategy and tactics for our clients, for each other. So for Rebel this past year, what we found to be successful is shifting our vision as a company to enable creativity by empowering rebellion. And we quite literally have a vision statement that is empower one another to truly realize what you're capable of. And that is this statement that rings through with annual reviews. It rings through in our conversations every day. It rings through with what we can empower our business to be able to achieve. And through the power of voice, we also did something really exciting this year. We launched a new podcast ourselves, which is why I have this fancy schmancy mic. But no other reason than we want to put this leadership platform to the test and bring it to people from a, you know, freedom of content, freedom of information standpoint. But there is a power of listening and digesting and understanding through the power of voice and passion and energy come through these things that you break through in a different way than if you just read a blog post, or if you just heard something written, or you gave feedback to somebody through text. So rebelleadershippodcast.com, it's available on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, it's on all of the major channels. But each episode digs deep into these really specific, intricate parts of leadership and management that are not talked about, that are not written about. It is the anti-leadership, rebellious leadership take that we all believe we should be talking more about. And therefore that platform was launched this year amidst COVID, amidst the chaos and confusion, to give aspiring leaders and current leaders the ability to look at things differently and just challenge their own status quo. So anyways, that was a long diatribe to say.
That's what we do.
Really
here.
Happy to be here. It's exciting to talk to you guys all and hear about your stories as well.
No, that's fine. You see, Paul took 10 minutes by himself. So it's fine for you to have that conversation. And you got to watch Paul, because you will be his spokesperson next with all that power of the voice. Okay. So, but this is my question for you. I had a guest last week, and the name of her business was Business Bitch. Right? So she gave all of her reasons on why she decided to go with this name. And so when I hear you speak, Allison, I hear your positivity. I hear your words. I hear your message. But for someone who, like me, who grew up on movies like Rebel Without a Cause, when I hear certain words, what I hear is not necessarily positive. So how do you, have you had that response?
It's so interesting you say that, because to us, we've really refined our brand over the past year. So we took a deep look at probably year and a half. We took a deep look at, like, what does it intrinsically mean to be a rebel? The word rebel really means something. And it's more of an aspirational word. I think everybody feels like they want to have a little rebel in them. They have a spontaneous side that's yet to be tapped. They may not act on it all the time, but I think there's something to be said that there is something about being rebel that is positive, that is about not just taking it for what it's worth. It's not just taking direction, dictating that direction, and then following through. It's saying, hang on a second, there's a different way of looking at this. It's not that we're breaking laws and being rude, right? It's that there is a way that you can go about things in a different way, and that's okay too. But if you actually look it up, actually, I'll tell you the quick short story about how the Rebel Leadership Podcast was started, because it had nothing to do with our business. So the term rebel leadership is a concept that Harvard Business Review has written about. There's books about it. And the rebel leadership concept is about positive leadership. It's about anti-corporate leadership. It's about having the audacity to give somebody direct feedback and not gossiping about it. It's about approaching things in an unconventional way. It is rebellious in its nature because it is not the typical leadership style. It's about building people up instead of putting them down. So in that sense, the entire concept of it is built on this positivity platform. And I love that you asked that, because positivity spreads like wildfire, just like negativity does. And once you're around leaders who are positive, and Belle, I'd be curious your take on this, because once you're around a positive leader, you realize how far that gets people, but ultimately your business, versus the negativity that can literally take down a business's operations single-handedly.
I love it.
I'm also curious at some point to hear about the distinction you draw between rebel and contrarian, because I think that's a crucial distinction, right? Coming back to that notion of rebel without a cause, there is a tendency, I think, for some people to associate rebelliousness with pure contrarianism, doing what's different purely for the sake of being different. And it sounds like you're you're taking a much more wise right view of the world. It's not
right.
It's not just being.
It's not different. It's not about rebelling just for the sake of rebelling. I mean, I think everybody has that power within them to say, let me just pause. It's about that pause moment to say, are we doing this for the right reasons? Are we solving the right problem? Are we looking at the upstream problem, or are we just like whack-a-moling the symptoms? Mm-hmm. You know, so like really stopping to say, wait a second, should we think about this differently right now? Should we think about this situation at hand, this bigger picture, this strategy, this business plan, whatever it is that you're doing? Is there an opportunity to just pause and challenge what you had once done, especially if you were the one who implemented it in the first place?
Absolutely. I want to discuss that further, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Ms. Felicia Young is a higher education consultant for over 15 years. She's also a mom, entrepreneur, educator, student, and friend. She thoroughly enjoys the work she does with students and tells people she loves financial aid. Promoting education without debt is her primary message. Good morning, Felicia. How are you?
Good morning. I am so happy to be here with you guys. I've learned so much already just from the introductions. So I'm happy.
Thank you. That's why we start with the introductions, but knowing this group right here, we would have been going for another 45 minutes on this topic. So I'm like, let me bring in Felicia.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Felicia, who you are and what you do.
Okay, well, first, I am from Louisiana, so I am happy to be up with you guys up super early. It's not as early for me here, but I am the owner of Higher Minds of Education, which is a higher education consulting company where I help students and families complete FAFSA, as well as college applications, also doing FAFSA the right way, and just all things college. So back almost 20 years ago, we were told that student debt was good debt. We have now found out that that is not a good thing. There is $1.6 trillion worth of student loan debt in the U.S. alone. So I created this company to help students and families avoid some of that debt. We all see the Facebook stories or the stories on the news of students who have acquired hundreds of thousands of dollars to attend college. So I tried to do my part in helping students that I encounter get a little piece of that money. So it is my pleasure to work with students. I absolutely love students. I will tell you guys, I started my career in financial aid probably about 15 years ago on the first day of class at a university in Monroe, Louisiana. So being there in that crazy chaos, I loved it, and I have been hooked ever since. I love the drama of higher ed, the drama of nobody having anything completed on time. I absolutely love it. So it is my joy to help students not graduate with debt. I want to help those students out.
What would be the perfect number for Felicia, Paul?
Well, out of debt, you know, anything that would, I'd have to learn more about, you know, a lot of people confuse a number with necessarily what you do, you know, so it has to be debt related. Maybe there's a tagline that Felicia uses in her marketing. So marketing, I think one of the mistakes people make is they look at things in silos. They might talk to Allison about the digital, then they get a phone number from me, and then they might have, you know, Bell doing PR. But if we're all not talking, if her tagline is, I give you freedom, I help you get freedom, then maybe the term is freedom. So as marketers, I love digital marketing. I work with a lot of digital marketing teams, and let's all communicate so there's a common theme. Maybe her entire, your message is, you know, ask Sharifa. Now, I might not recommend Sharifa as a number because I think for some people, they might not be able to spell it, but maybe, you know, Felicia's tagline is all about, you know.
Oh, I have an idea.
Her name.
What if it's 1-800 Hi Felicia instead of Bye Felicia?
Right. I love it. But Paul had me at his when he did his introduction. And I was like, oh yes, I'm contacting Paul as soon as this is over so I can get a number. So yes,
we will absolutely get you one. And as I said to Belle, that I provide numbers to nonprofits at no cost. I'm a big supporter of nonprofits. I also heavily discount for business owners who were former military, try to help people get back into the, you know, work. So, you know, it's really a passion. I definitely want to talk to everybody. As Sharifa knows, I write all these notes down. Allison, I have to tell you, I would never be apologetic about the fact that your name is rebellious. I'd be unapologetic about it, own it. I think people we think we have to conform to someone else's standard of what being a rebel means. We don't. You could redefine it.
Isn't that ironic, feeling pressure to define rebel by other people's?
Yeah, rebels, you know, I don't know if you, there's a book you might want to get for you and your team by Sam Conniff called Be More Pirate. And it's phenomenal. It's about how all of the businesses we see in the revolutions have come from business owners being pirates. And believe it or not, everything we know about pirates is completely made up from movies, and it's not what pirates were. So there's a book called Be More Pirate, and it's about how the Ubers of the world and the Snap, they became, and cryptocurrencies, how they thought outside the box. And so
to that point, even right on our homepage, we have change never happens without rebellion. I mean, think about all the innovation that's happened in our society. Go back to all the famous rebels, Steve Jobs, you know, like think about those people who said one thing, introduced something that was completely rebellious for that time, and that changed the world.
Right. What it does, like, it forces the kind of tried and true, kind of stuck order. The reason the banking industry is changing, and I'm talking about the Chase and the Bank of America's and the JP Morgan's, the reason they're changing at hyperspeed is because of the pirates, because of the rebels. The rebels went out there and said, this model's broken. And they fixed it. Well, they didn't fix it. They created cryptocurrencies and Venmos. And then that causes the kind of tried and true banking conservative companies to innovate quicker. The automobile industry is innovating quicker. Why? Because of a rebel named Elon Musk. So I love redefining what rebel is. I don't think there's any negative. And I think that's also, by the way, and I'll go back to the power of voice, is that if I just went to your site and saw rebel, there might be someone's reaction of, oh, rebel, are they breaking rules?
Yeah.
Versus in a conversation, you can define, you can clarify for me. You could say, we don't mean this, we mean this. So that's why voice is immediate. But, and I also, by the way, believe that your voice, when I say your voice, I don't just mean the sound. My voice could be in a blog post. I'm not trying to write my blog post like Bell. I'm trying to write my blog post so when you read it, you're hearing me.
Yes.
I have a question about some of these examples that were given, because particularly when you talk, Allison, about the Rebel Leadership podcast, right? All of that positivity, all of that enabling and empowerment, that is the opposite of what I think of when I hear Uber, when I hear Elon Musk, when I hear Steve Jobs. Those are cultures and individuals who were notorious for dictatorial, shut down, very narrow views of the world. And I'm curious how you reconcile that sort of cultural norm we've built around rebellion with the rebel leadership you're talking
about. So it's interesting because, like, each of them has a narrative that is cultural norm and understanding. But if you dig deeper, they obviously have their quirks and nobody's perfect, but their expectations are very high and very clear. And so that alone, expectation setting and vision, is a big form of rebel leadership. So I'm not saying I'm Pollyanna all the time. My team knows that I have very high expectations of them, but they know what those expectations are. That's my job as a leader, to say, here's what I'm asking you to do. Here's the vision for your role. Now you bring your piece of your vision to it. You level this up. You are empowered to truly make this exceptional. And I think what those leaders get a bad rap for is that not everybody loves that vision or that clarity or that persistent end game to say, I'm going to be relentless in this end goal because I know that this will change society or whatever it is. They might not love the style that that person goes into, but they're visionary leaders in that sense. They're rebellious.
Yeah, I think that was an excellent answer. Also wanted to respond to your answer, Bill. I can see it perfectly when I look at it, when I look at the Elon Musk and the Ubers of the world, because these are companies and people who the status quo was absolutely 100% one way. And they said, no, I'm going to do it this way. And so they had to rebel against what was common. And, you know, when you think of Ford and all the people who went in a different direction, it's because they didn't do it the way it's always been done, which brings me back to Felicia. I want to talk about being a rebel within this student debt and student loan industry, because right now, one of the top outcries, I believe, and I'm getting a little political, but in America, I don't know why, is the student loan debt. You know, you have doctors and lawyers that are practicing, have been practicing for 15, 20 years, still paying off this same debt. What are your thoughts? What can we do about that?
Yeah, I truly, truly think that, you know, doing some type of forgiveness would be excellent, especially for those in the medical field and professionals. We bail out everybody in America except for students. And so yes. I did a talk a while back at a Chamber of Commerce meeting and discussed how if we don't help these students be able to get this debt under control, they will never have the American dream. They won't be able to buy houses and cars and get life insurance because they're sinking in student loan debt. So not that, you know, there should be a free ride or anything, but there should be some type of bailout to help these students because everyone else gets bailed out. Yes, Paul.
Here's my question. And as Sharifa knows from the other show we host, I tend to ask the questions that, that will be whispered in the background, but no one's, okay. But people are afraid to come out and say it in an open forum. So when I ask this question or make this point, it's not necessarily my viewpoint. It's what people will talk about the second we end the podcast. And someone will message me, here's the question. And how do you answer it? Wait a minute, Felicia. You knew the rate, you knew that you were borrowing 100 grand. You knew the rate was 10%. I'm making this up. You took it. You accepted it because you wanted to go to school. So how is it fair for you now to say, I took your money. I signed the document. I knew the rate. Now I want you to wipe it out because it's just not fair for me. And what is that precedent set? And again, I'm not saying that I disagree with figuring out a way to help students out and pay down debt. I get it. And we have bailed out companies. But so then maybe the next crop of people, I go to my bank and I go sign a mortgage and I go, you know what? I probably can't pay this back, but I'm going to sign it. And I hope that in 5, 6, 7, 10 years, some politician will come around and help me forgive my debt. So how do we reconcile the fact that we do need to help people and debt is crushing people with some personal responsibility? You know, do we spread out the debt longer? Do we, I don't know the answer, but you hear that all the time from one group of people. That's BS. They took it. They knew what they were taking. They knew the rate. Now they want free money. Like,
you see what I mean, Felicia? This is why I told the audience Paul is trouble. He's going to ask us something that's going to throw us.
No, I love the question.
That's how we get. People are going to whisper that off the podcast. They're going to say, I sold that guest, Felicia. Oh, great. Now they want us to. So let's ask right now. Let's talk about it.
But I love your question. Here's my answer. Students are not properly informed of what they're signing. That's number one. You have grown adults who are signing documents that don't understand it. So I know someone 17, 18, 19 years old does not understand the implications of what they're signing. We all believe when we graduate that we're going to get these $100,000 jobs when we graduate from college. That does not happen. We mostly all start out with like $40,000. So that's the first question. No one is being properly informed. Okay. Second, my second part to that is when you say about the company. Well, people give mortgages out to people they know aren't going to be able to pay. They default on the houses. The big banks get bailed out. Not everybody gets bailed out. But they knew that this would happen. Like, they, you know, just like you can say for students, oh, they know that they're taking this money out. They're going to have to pay it back. But that's the same thing for companies. They take the risk. So there should be something to help students. I'm not just saying let's just wipe away all the debt. But on the front end of helping students, there has to be something. Colleges were created to educate, right? That is not necessarily always happening. It is a billion-dollar business. And so... treat education as a billion-dollar business. We need to give students increased salaries, because you'll see a job description that says you need to have 5 to 7 years, a master's degree, but they're only giving you $50,000. How are you supposed to pay back $100,000 right, of debt that you had to get the master's degree with in order to get the job? Like, it's
And Felicia, I think you're making an important point also about the expectations going in, right? Because this is happening at all levels of education, and a large percent of the debt, one, comes from for-profit universities, which were not a thing a couple decades ago, right? And so that's one element where it has been effectively in the organization's best interest for people not to understand what they're getting into, to overinflate the expectations coming out rather than providing a realistic picture. But especially at graduate level institutions, right? And this is a much smaller percent, but if you look at PhD stipends, for example, so with master's degrees, there the increase in salary that versus the trade-off in time often will pay for a master's degree over time. For PhDs, you will never make that money back. And that is something that PhD students should know and are very rarely told, even in computer science, right? In these very high paying organizations, the opportunity cost of what you lose from the years that you are in a PhD program, you will never make back your costs.
You know what I love? There was a company set up, and I saw them interviewed once, and I don't know why this concept hasn't taken off. So you're a student and you can't afford school, higher education. You might have to go get a loan from a bank or student loan organization. There was a tech company set up, and it allowed people like me, entrepreneurs with some free capital, to invest in you. So you would go on this platform, say, I'm Felicia Young, these are my grades, here's my transcript, this is what I want to study, I need $100,000. And I could say, okay, Felicia, I'll kick in $5,000. I'm able to invest in your future. So if I think you're a superstar, just like I invest in a stock that I think is going to grow, I think Felicia's a superstar, I'm willing to put in $5,000, $10,000 for a reasonable percentage of future earnings until I make a return. And now we can allow individuals to bank on our students, and maybe companies, maybe as a business, I can go in there and invest in some kids and say, I'll help you with your education. Maybe they come work. If you come work for me, it wipes out your debt. If you don't come work for me, I get a piece of, maybe we need to look at those formats, because if we have more options, if the only option is your parents, or a loan institution, the rates are going to be whatever the loan institutions want, because they know they're the last resort. If we open up the market, now those loan institutions have to compete against me and Allison and Bell. Maybe we start to, just like what happened in the real estate business, the real estate brokers all wanted 5-6%. All of a sudden technology came in, and now companies could offer 2-3%. So maybe we need more options. Money, I'm investing money.
Right, we do need more options.
What if universities allowed that? We're going to give you this education, and we're going to invest in you because we believe that we're giving you a great education, and you're going to make money. So maybe.
But Paul, that is so unlikely to happen, because that's not the reality, right? The student debt exists because there's a discrepancy between what is charged for education right now and the realistic upside earning potential for most degrees.
Isn't what they charge not based on that? What they charge is based on what they can get. So
absolutely, but
because it's a business, right? It's not about educating the student per se, as it is a business. There are hundreds of thousands of students who started college, amassed large amounts of debt, yet have no degree. So we have that bucket of people who are, we're just talking about the students with degrees. Think about all of the students who have no degrees and student debt, who work, you know, regular jobs, $10, $12 an hour, you know? So we have to think about those students as well. There is
some rebellious schools.
Yes, let's hear from Allison. Allison has been so patient. She tried to jump in a couple of times. Allison, you will learn, especially with Paul.
I love it. I love strong opinions. It's so fascinating hearing all of you guys talk about this topic, because I'm very familiar with higher ed, because that's one of the verticals that we focus on from a digital marketing standpoint. So I see this from a lot of different angles. One, Felicia, I fully believe in what Felicia is saying, because when you strip it all back, institutions, higher education institutions, are businesses. And each year they are pricing their services higher than the year past without refining their product. So now on the employer side, now in my role as president of this agency, I see all the interview candidates and I see all the people coming through the institution mill, right? And they are not prepared to take a job right out of college at a digital marketing agency. What they are teaching, that's not their fault. That's the institution's fault. So they are not evolving their product. They are teaching from textbooks, and that is not the world we live in today. Well, so they're not getting hands-on experience. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
let me say something. Allison, I totally agree with you, because it's only in higher education can you give a product that you've been given since the 1800s the same way and charge $1 million for it. Only in higher education.
But let me just say this, Felicia. Let me just say this. Let me just say this, because that was going to be my question, is that the product has changed, which is one of the debates that's been going on now, is that people are paying for these higher educations, hundreds of thousands of dollars, but sitting at home on their computer.
Yeah, in some cases. So in some institutions it has, Sharifa, I totally agree. In most institution, it hasn't. So that's where it's the student has to be empowered to do more research. It's no longer a game of like, what's the shiny object name of the institution I should go towards? Like, it's not about brand recognition at all. It's about research. And so if that student, say you did a little bit more research, right? And you go against the grain of going to a typical four-year school, there are programs out there that you could get the same exact education for a fraction of the cost and require less debt and financial aid. So it's like, there actually are options out there, like the Power MBA, like certifications that Google's offering. There are certifications out there that do just as much for your, I know higher ed is going to crumble if they heard me say this, but really it's up to you and if you're the parent of a student who's going to college, it is up to you before you sign that paperwork to know what debt you're getting into, to really understand what product it is you're signing up for.
Absolutely. One of the things that I was mentioning, and as far as the change that many people are debating, is that when you go to college or university, you want a certain experience. You want to be on campus. You want to be with your classmates. You want to be around your professors. But the price has not changed for that education, and now it's become online education.
Right. Paul, in 2020, okay, so I'm gonna say it's because of COVID, right? Well, and that's been a huge point.
We can blame the universities, and I think there's some fault there. I think that a lot of them qualify for non-tax status, which is ridiculous, because it's not just made off the education money, it's made off the football and the basketball. So I think we have holes in the system that we can fix. But the issue is, we can't keep blaming the universities. If the reason the price goes up every year, why is it? It's because they get 20,000 seats to fill and they get 50,000 applications. This is business 101. If you want the price to come down, stop effing going. Okay, there's a lot of companies, especially in Silicon Valley and the tech world, that have said, we don't require a four-year college education anymore. But all these kids think that they're supposed to, because it's
because
what they
they're told.
They're supposed
to
go.
They're supposed to go.
So they go out of high school and they're supposed to go. So they go and then they wave this paper around saying, I'm entitled to a job because I got this paper. Let me tell you something. You're entitled to one thing only, to breathe. Everything else, you're not entitled to. So if you
is
want-
Is that the speech you give your children, Paul? What? That's the speech you give them, what they're entitled to?
I begged my son not to go to college. I said, you don't know what you want to do. Take a year off. I will pay for you to do 6 months of internship and travel in Europe and 6 months of internship in Israel, where you're going to work and travel, see the world, get out of the Northeast, grow up a little bit. Maybe you figure out you want to paint frogs all day. Right now you have no clue. So don't go, because that piece of paper saying, look, I paid, I took math and history and science. You owe me. You know what I owe you? Nothing. So the reason we can blame universities all day long, stop going. Our education system, go to a thing. I know people who make millions and millions and millions of dollars a year who didn't go to college. But you think when you come out, and you think it means something, that's the way it's going to change. You can't punish the universities. They put out a product.
And Paul, there's a careful balance though, right? Because on the one hand, in terms of pure earnings potential, in terms of pure focus, et cetera, I think what you're talking about is great, right? Like, it drives me bonkers that our society has put this very arbitrary value on higher education. That being said, I do also believe that there is significant value in a liberal arts education in having that academic opportunity to explore. And so what you're talking about with taking that time to understand what you want, I think is absolutely crucial. But I do feel very strongly that for some people, what they want is that academic exploration. And we have to encourage that because that is where a significant amount of innovation comes from. Innovation is not limited to STEM fields. There is innovation in broader humanity and society that comes directly from innovation. And right now, we don't enable that. And I think that's a fair amount of what Felicia's work supports, which is crucial.
But if you want a degree in ancient Egyptian philosophy because it's your passion, I love it. Don't go to Syracuse University at $70,000. You can't study what you want because you're passionate about it, then also pick the college you want. World doesn't work that way. Okay, if you want to study,
the world does work that way, Paul. They're doing it, but I agree.
They are, but then they've got $70,000 a year in debt, right, or they're going to come out into a field that they might make $25,000.
But, Paul, how do you get into ancient Egyptian studies without a 4-year degree? Like, there are certain fields right now that is a straight up gating factor.
But you might be able to get a 4-year. But you might not be able to go to the school you want to go to. That's a choice. You might have to go to community college for $5,000. You can't go to Miami or Syracuse, right? So there is some personal responsibility that comes. It's not, this is what I want, this is where I want to go.
Yeah, I disagree with that for a lot of these fields because when you get into some of these very specific fields, if you are truly passionate about it, you do have to have that name brand recognition. That does become a gating factor. And so if you go to community college and think that you're going to be able to get onto a prestigious or even just any right exploration that's paid in some of these niche elements, like, there's a broader societal issue. Like, I understand what you're saying about individual responsibility, but there are no paths available right now for students who want to study ancient Egyptian anything and have a cost-effective degree. Like, it's not more society.
I agree with Belle. I think what I'm hearing is, like, this is the reason why higher ed gets us so fired up. It's basically like dropping a bomb of politics into a
without being political, right?
Because what
this is going to be my first issue right here, student loans. That's going to be my first.
Because you can't not. It's a systemic problem. That's why. Because, like, there are a million and one different ways to look at this problem. There are many problems that we face. And just like Felicia said, I feel like we are on the cusp of a higher ed bubble, just like the housing bubble, just like the financial crisis, just like the internet bubble, right? We are at the precipice of that happening. And it's just a matter of, like, how this is all going to look, because that basically happened this year. Everything without, like, now you take away the physical property of going to campus and paying for that campus experience. And now those institutions are not discounting their product even without the campus experience. So you're left to pricing the price tag based on this online experience.
The brochure.
And the value kind of, like, crumbles, right? So, like, there's so much intricacy here. And it's not about, I know you kept using the word blame. It's not that there's blame. Like, basically everybody, society is to blame. Businesses are to blame, institutions are to blame, financial aid is to blame, because we're basically, like, solving the symptoms of the core problem and not really solving it upstream, just like a lot of political conversations right now. We're actually just whack-a-moling on all the things that this perpetuates, but not actually solving the core of it. So I think, Sharifa, this is, like, ripe for disruption and ripe for challenging status quo in many different facets of this very complex systemic problem.
And systemic is exactly the right word, right? And if you look at the systematics Bible, there's a twin limits theorem that which is really perfect here, which says you can't change in a complex system, which I think we can all agree higher education is a complex system. You can't change one thing and you can't change everything, right? And it's like a kaleidoscope. If you try to move the one red piece from here to there, you're going to end up moving 18 other pieces that you didn't intend to. And I think that that's exactly what happens with higher education, any of these complex systems.
But in order to fix them, you have to break them. Okay, when Elon Musk came out with his electric car, there was no path to profitability. In fact, he doesn't care about it. He cared about disrupting the world and the industry. So we all know the education system is broken. You know, even the elementary school system, we're still teaching this. Some kids don't learn that way. Some kids are visual learners. Some kids are auditory learners.
Play-based learning is more effective, but the U.S. does not follow that.
People do the same system. So we need to have rebellious change. Pirate, which, by the way, we are seeing. And I believe, like we talked about on the other show, it has nothing to do with legislation and politicians. It's the people. We can change it. How? Don't send your kid to school. Force change. When they went to online, pull your kid out of school if you don't like it. But you can't have it both ways. I was a contrarian voice in my son's college thread with all
no
the parents.
No way.
They were super pissed off. That it was super online and everybody's pissed off and this is, our kids aren't going to learn. And I said, I completely disagree with you. Look, COVID is something new. No one's ever faced it. You know what? If it's one semester, I think this is going to be awesome for my son. You know why? Because when my son comes out of college in 2.5 more years, guess what world he's coming into? He's coming into a world that's going to be decentralized. He might work on a team where he's got someone in Pakistan, China, Russia, South America, and he's in New York on his team. He's going to have to learn how to use Zoom, learn how to put together meetings that are not in person, learn how to build relationships with people that he doesn't sit with. So if it takes him one semester, he doesn't have to be a class. He needs to discipline his ass to get up, to set up study groups, to use technology, to use Google Docs and sharing. So if he gets one semester to learn these skills, and now I can get him back to the socialization and the being next to everybody, I'm okay with it for one semester because it's forcing him to learn in a way that's going to be the world. And so I was okay with it and I wasn't pulling him out of school. And you know what? He's adapted and now he's got a whole nother set of skills in his pocket that he never would have had. Is it perfect? No, but guess what, folks? The world ain't perfect. We can't.
It's not. Agree with you, Paul. I agree. The going online has helped to change education in ways we could have not imagined before. So I do think in a crazy twisted way, the whole COVID situation has allowed our children to learn skills that they would not have learned before.
And how's about kids who are not going to have to pay that dorm fee, the housing fee? We might have more kids being able to go to that Syracuse down the road that not pay the extra 15-20 because universities have been forced to use technology and professors. Look, this happened by mistake but now we're going to have systems very shortly where not only can we see the professors, but the professors can see us. We're going to be sitting in a VR world soon where I could turn and see Bell and I could see Alice and I can introduce myself during class and pass a note that says, will you go out with me? Yes, no, maybe.
And on that note,
I said a lot of those notes.
Paul, I'm gonna talk to your wife one day and I'm gonna ask her, how do you put up with him? How do you do this with what? You've been married, 50 years now?
20, some of our 4 or 5, some. Mm-hmm. 25, but I got 2 years off for good behavior and I did 1 year solitary.
You know what, Paul, you are in trouble. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show, and what I absolutely love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Felicia.
Okay, yes, I would like everyone to go to my website, www.hmofed.com. Go check out my services. I am doing a popcorn fundraiser for a scholarship to help a high school senior pay for college. So the popcorn is only $7. We have birthday cake flavor, strawberry, as well as cookies and cream. So make
What's the website?
www.hmofed.com.
Count me in for $100 worth of popcorn.
Okay, yay, thank you.
Okay, am I ordering my own, Paul, or are you sending me some?
No, Paul's going to buy it for all of us.
I'm buying for all the guests. I need everyone's address. I'm buying it for all the guests here.
Thank you, Paul. Also, I want everyone to know that I created a student planner. I don't know if you guys can see this. This is to help a high school senior know what they should be doing month by month their senior year. It'll also be good for a junior so they can be on track early. It is on the website right now, only for $10. Wonderful website. Check it out. HMOFED.com. Thank you, guys.
Read the title, Felicia, Higher Minds of Education.
Higher Minds. Pardon me?
It's a planner book?
Yes. It's like a wedding planner, but it's a student planner.
That's your commercial right there. Allison, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so it just with anybody who's looking to go into the world of digital marketing, just really question what it is you're about to set forth and do. Make sure you're looking at your strategies with a critiquing eye. Be willing to be wrong. Be willing to learn. And make sure you have a partner there that's willing to bring you along for the ride and is doing that learning for you, because it is super, super complex and changing every single day in the world of search and paid platforms and organic. So I'd encourage everybody to check out rebelinteractivegroup.com to check out what our agency is doing. And then if you are an avid podcast listener, also find rebelleadershippodcast.com or find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcast, it's listed. And it has nothing to do with marketing. It's not a hard sell. It's everything that has to do with how leadership should sound. And we're constantly talking about the hard stuff and really refining what it is to mean to be a leader every single day, because it is a constant work in progress. We are all constant works in progress. I've learned a ton from you guys today, just hearing your stories and your perspectives on very complex topics, and hope everybody who listens will feel the same. So thank you so much for having me on, Sharifa. It was such a blast.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us, Allison. Bill, what do you have for us?
So building on what Allison said, for nonprofit leaders who are learning a lot about leadership and want hands-on management experience to build on top of that motivation and inspiration to be able to support and enable their teams, check out nfpbootcamp.com. Apply for our session in early 2021, starting January 25th. And for people who have been listening to this conversation about higher ed and thinking, that's a huge, complex, crazy system, but you know what? My business is also a system with a whole bunch of moving parts and pieces. You're trying to figure out how to approach change if you can't just move that one piece in the kaleidoscope. That's what the Friction to Function interactive webinar is all about. So you can find that on Eventbrite, Friction to Function. And I'm looking forward to seeing you all there. Sharifa, this has been one of my favorite episodes. I'm so excited I got to join today.
I can imagine this has been a blast. And believe me, not many people disagree with Paul. And the ones who disagree with Paul usually don't verbalize it. So we're going to have to bring you guys back together, because that's what we came to do. Paul, go ahead and take us out.
I say the same thing from our other show. Come on the show. Come on, being okay, not being right. Not winning, just come on with your opinions and thoughts. We'll be open to learn from other people, because that's, you know, I come in with what I know, what I think from these eyes, these shoes, my life. So come on the show and talk, and then be willing to learn from other people and expand your knowledge base. And then I think together we can make changes. I don't think in the institutions of the world and the web, I don't think any of those are without change. But we could do it one person at a time, one group at a time. So I love coming on your shows. I love talking. I love challenging because it really gets us to understand issues.
The power of the voice, Paul.
Power of your voice?
How do they get the power of the voice?
My voice? Yeah, well, I always hate talking about my business. It's ringboost.com, RINGBOOST. You can go there and search for a number, or just contact me, especially if you're not sure, you're a nonprofit, or you want some help. I love talking to clients directly and helping them one-on-one. But if you're one of those people that prefers to just search on your own, go to the website, check it out, and let's help you get more calls and drive more voice interaction. But more importantly, go out there and change the world somehow.
Absolutely powerful words to end the show. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support. We appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate you sharing the show. But please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Please support our guests. Visit their websites. Follow them on social media. And when you contact them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.